Committee, we have a quorum, so we'll get started. I call to order the Veterans Affairs Division. Representative Hawes, have you reviewed the minutes from February 22?
I am, and I'm excited about moving them forward.
Representative Hawes moves approval of the minutes of February 22nd. Any discussion on the minutes? All in favor of approval, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The February 22nd minutes are approved. Okay, first bill up, Representative Detmer, House File 3298. Representative Detmer, welcome to your committee, and would you like to move your bill?
I certainly do, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Detmer moves that House File 3298 be moved with recommendation to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, first of all, I'd like to introduce Don Kerr. He's with Military Affairs, and he'll be speaking towards this bill. So I'll just give a short introduction. Basically, this is a cleanup bill where deleting Minnesota Statutes 197, according to Minnesota Statutes 192.23. Basically, what we're doing, we're eliminating some ribbons that have been given out before, and because the federal government has now provided ribbons for Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. And I'd like to turn this over to Mr. Kerr.
Okay, thank you, Representative Detmer. And Mr. Kerr, I want to say, first of all, welcome. It's good to have you. If you'd like to give a short introduction to the committee and your new work, and then go ahead with your testimony.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for allowing me to testify today, and I'd be very happy to do that. It's kind of a significant day for me today, officially my last day as a colonel in the Army. I become retired at midnight tonight. So I'm a little apprehensive about that. For the last 28 years, I've been wearing the uniform, and for the last 3 weeks, I've been test driving the suit thing. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Don't crash it.
But the good news is I'm not going very far, and I was actually hired by the Department of Military Affairs to become the acting director of military reintegration, and I'm looking forward to carrying that forward and assisting other state agencies and assisting us in that effort and joining and partnering with the Department of Veterans Affairs and in their efforts and energies that have been put forth in that and a whole bunch of organizations, both governmental and non-governmental, and it should be very exciting and interesting for me.
All right, good. Thank you. We look forward to working with you. I go ahead with the testimony.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. As Representative Detmer said, it has kind of been a long policy to allow the federal government to recognize service for the federal government and allow state governments to recognize service for state government. And this award was authorized by the legislature. It was actually never carried out. The Department of Military Affairs never actually got through the process of designing, producing, and awarding this because the federal award for the period of service came along so quickly that it really rendered it obsolete and outside the statute. And so this is really a cleanup bill, and the department would like to see it removed from the books just to clean everything up for the future and not establish any undue precedent. And that's basically the summary of the question, and I'd be happy to answer any of your questions.
All right. Any questions from committee members? Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Were any medals given out by Minnesota that now have to be taken off, or do they stay on? Or I'm just curious. If you got 4 or 5 rows of ribbons, that's a lot of work.
Mr. Kerr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Wardlow. No, none of these ribbons were ever produced or awarded to soldiers in Minnesota.
Okay, further questions? Anybody from the audience who wishes to testify on the bill? Okay, Representative Detmer.
yes, I just would like to see that this is moved on to the next level here, and just thank you for your support.
Okay, thank you. Representative Detmer renews his motion that the bill pass with recommendation to Agricultural, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion is approved. And Representative Detmer, House File 3297.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, House File 3297. This is legislation extends the privilege of Reverend Officer Promotion to soldiers who were killed while on duty and died as a result of their injuries sustained by the result of in-duty service. Now, currently, soldiers have resigned or retired as a result of injuries sustained while on duty, may be brevetted to their next higher rank at the discretion of the Commander-in-Chief, well, with the urging of the Adjutant General. The post-service increase in rank does not increase the pay composition, retirement, or benefits. It is simply a gesture to acknowledge their sacrifice during service. I'd like to turn it over.
Okay, Representative Detmer, let's get the bill before the committee. Representative Detmer moves moves the bill with recommendation that it be passed to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. And Mr. Kurtz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. This particular provision of the bill is being added because we, and as often happens, ran into a circumstance that we should have been able to anticipate but did not when we had soldiers killed in action in Iraq and found that we were prohibited by statute from promoting them, from providing a brevet promotion to them, simply because the language was written so that they, if they died, they were not eligible, or did not state that they were eligible if they died. And we really think that adding this provision would clean that up and be a very appropriate gesture to the families and to the memory of the soldiers who give their lives in service of the nation and state.
Okay, thank you. Representative Detmer, anything further?
No, again, there's no financial thing with this. It's just for ceremonial purposes and to show respect.
Okay. A question from committee members? No? Anybody from the audience wishes to testify on the bill? Okay. Representative Detmer renews his motion that the bill pass with recommendation to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion is approved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Dominguez. Okay, welcome to your committee, Representative Dominguez. And Representative Dominguez moves for approval with recommendation that the bill be passed to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. I would like to move House File 3240. House File 3240 is a plaque that we want to present to the Mexican-American veterans, but we also have some amendments to it, and we're going to have a discussion on those and some of the background information that was given to you in your packets. Also, the page is handing out information of the background of the honorable Mexican-Americans and the services and what they have done for this country. I brought that information so you could get some background on the services throughout our armed forces. We have Mexican Americans that served in all the armed forces, and we're honored for them to have served in those forces from the beginning of the wars to today. We're handing out information so that you can read and look at all the honorable, mentionable members that have served and the United States Armed Forces. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mike. Mike is here in presence of Commissioner Mike Clark Dyrou, who's our commissioner, which we had conversation with him about the plaque when we first begun to even think about doing the plaque with the Mexican-American veterans. But before we go on, I want to just introduce our Mexican-American veterans who are right behind you here, that are here and proudly serve the armed forces. And so thank you for coming. I appreciate the support that you're going to be giving here today. With that, Mike, if you want to go ahead and present.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Mike Puglisi, Deputy Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. We're just here today to lend our support towards this bill. We're extremely supportive of the efforts to recognize Mexican-American veterans and all other ethnic groups. But we also want to be mindful that the space out there in the Capitol Mall is extremely limited. So when we go forward with plaques like this, we try to make sure that they're all inclusive so that we have space for the future. So I know that Representative Dominguez has been working with Paul Mandela of the CAP Board to ensure that this plaque achieves that, and I believe the amendment does do that. So we're very supportive of it.
Okay, thank you. Representative Dominguez.
We also have the commander here from the Mexican-American Vets that would like to speak on behalf of the Mexican-American Vets.
All right. And thank you, and welcome to the committee, and if you can identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, and I'm not the commander. My name is Michael Medina. I'm the adjutant of Mexican-American Force 5. I'm also the chairman of the Mexican-American Memorial Committee. I serve with NDC, Naval Construction Battalion 40 in Chulai, Vietnam, 67-68. I'm a member of the Fighting 40 Veterans Group, which is my battalion that I went to Vietnam with. I am a member of the CB Era, Vietnam CB Era. I'm a member of the Vietnam American Island next to Minnesota CB. My father is a World War II veteran and probably the oldest member of our post, and is an active member of our post and still participates in all our activities, including parades. The Mexican-American post has been in existence for 6 years, and we are active in supporting community events and activities. Each year, we donate 2 tons of food to the Neighborhood House Food Bank. We support the Humboldt High School ROTC program with donations, and they participate in our events, and we hand out medals to them every year. It's important that we support this group because it has shown that the ROTC overall has a better grade average, and they are very much part of our group. We march in neighborhood parades and pull colors with many events throughout the year. Last year when Gladys Reyes, the young lady that was struck and hit by a hit-and-run driver, our post put together a fund for her, and we raised almost $4,000. Our members volunteer at Fort Snelling Hospital. One of our members, Reyes Wagner, and his wife received honors for the amount of hours donated, and this was a national award that they give to the Veterans Hospital. We have 5 members that serve on the Fort Snelling Rifle Squad and are in attendance for all military burials. We would have a larger showing today, but most of our members right now are setting up at Our Lady of Guadalupe Church, and every Lent we have an enchilada dinner. You're all invited to come down, or it's there all day today. But most of them are setting up the tables and helping the church put together this event. So we're active. We're also, we just had an honor for the Aguirre brothers. The Aguirre brothers, the family, had 11 brothers, and all of them served this country. from World War II to I think they still have an active member in the Armed Forces. And I believe he's a colonel. For myself, I'm a proud American. I'm a child of destiny. You know, I didn't ask to be here, but my story is unlike many of my other fellow veterans. My father and his parents migrated here in 1919. My father grew up in Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. He moved to St. Paul in 1925 when the Robert Street Bridge was built. He was drafted in service in 1944. He had three children and a wife. I talked to him about, you know, how do you feel about that? And he says, I was proud. I was also relieved. He says, all my friends had gone, and they're all over there serving World War II. And I was glad to go. My mother wasn't, but my dad was. And he was over in served with the Paracas Army, ready to invade Japan. Unfortunately, we dropped the atom bomb, and he came home after he spent some time in Japan with the occupation there. I think I'm speaking for most of my fellow veterans. Where my story is similar. We came here, we had the opportunity, this country gave us an opportunity. You know, after the war, many of these veterans came home, they were able to buy their homes, they were able to go to school, they took advantage of the GI Bill. And our community here is we've been here a long time. We have I just found out, a Matthias Hernandez Herta, who served in at the end of World War I from February 26, 1918 to December 1918. So we've been in Minnesota and serving this state and this country for a long time. So why is the plaque important? It's the first step for us in giving back. We're grateful. We're dedicated. Our sons and daughters and sisters and aunts and brothers and uncles and are still serving, and they are committed to serving. And you know, I talk to all my members. They're proud. They're proud of the time they put in the Army and Navy and all the armed forces. They're proud of the people they serve with. I enjoy my reunions with NCB 40 because I know these guys. We went through a lot. We were there during the Tet Offensive, and you bond with them. So it's important. And I guess this plaque is, again, us giving back, saying thank you, and we appreciate the opportunity.
All right, thank you, Mr. Medina. Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Either way, out west of here they say Medina. Over here they say Medina.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Medina. Thank you. Anything further, Representative Dominguez?
Yes, we want to continue with the bill itself. Paul, which is from CAP, if you could come forward, we have an amendment to the bill itself, and we'd like to change that. Working with Paul, who is with CAP, which is the capital architect here, I think you may have gotten the new amendment in your package.
I don't think I didn't see that. Oh, yeah, I know.
It looks like it's being handed out now.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
My apologies, Mr. Chair. We worked this worked with the representative just yesterday afternoon, so I did not have time to get it done in the proper format in the revisor's office, etc. My name is Paul Mandel. I'm with the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board. I'm the principal planner. I've been there for 20 years. This committee usually does not see us. We are a minor clause in every plaque We work with the Veterans Affairs to approve the language of all the plaques that go out there. But we have jurisdiction over a 60-block area surrounding the state capitol. We have all zoning and design controls on state buildings, memorials. We generate the design competition, and I've project managed the Korean, the Vietnam veterans, and most recently the World War II memorial. So it's been my honor to serve with a number of the people in the audience. And but that's about all you hear from us. The reason I'm here today is, as you see from the list, it's a revised list. The original list that was handed out had a few inaccuracies. Ours is completely up to date. As you can see, there are 13 plaques that are currently existing out on the Court of Honor. There are two that are pending that the legislature approved within the past 2 years, one to War Dogs and one to Medal of Honor recipients. And there are only 9 spaces left. You might note that we don't have anything yet to any of the Gulf Wars, the Iraq War, the Afghanistan War. So we are quickly, as Assistant Commissioner Mike Puglisi pointed out, we are quickly running out of space. You'll note one of the plaques out there. Our issue is inclusiveness, and we try to make one plaque serve as many as possible. Each of the wars is recognized. One of the plaques on the staff list, it was listed as women civilians who served in the war, and that was actually a plaque that started out as a Merchant Marine plaque with some opposition from a number of veterans groups. What it ended up being was a plaque that recognized 38 civilian groups that had contributed to the war effort. Until after World War II, the Merchant Marine were technically not part of the armed forces. So there were 38 groups that were actually listed, and that was a compromise position that was worked out with the client group that included a number, including some groups from Northwest Airlines that flew planes into the war zone for supply, etc. So in working with Representative Ringwood, the language that I apologize, I did this on my computer last night, so it's not the proper way to present it to you, but what I think it would accomplish, and I surveyed this, I'm on the school board in Inver Grove Heights, so I surveyed this with our multicultural liaison for our school district. I believe it would solve the problem of both recognizing Mexican-American veterans who started this effort, and have all, my understanding is, have already fundraised for the plaque, as well as all other nationalities, ethnic groups, and subgroups. And our cultural liaison person down in my school district said that should serve to provide coverage for all groups that feel slighted by having one group recognized. If this language was incorporated, we could support this plaque, because I think then we don't have the fear that there'll be someone coming next. And if you started trying to list all the nationalities and subgroups, the list would probably stretch from here to New York. What we want to do is avoid dividing people. We want to try to unite people. So I think this would accomplish what is needed to make this plaque serve one and all, and not start opening the Pandora's box of having other people come behind.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mandel. Representative Dominguez?
Paul is correct in what he has mentioned just a minute ago. And speaking along with the Mexican-American vets, they agreed to this. They're very inclusive. In the beginning, when we started out talking about the plaques, they were inclusive then. And when they heard about this, they were welcoming the language that we could include others. And I think this is the appropriate way that we can follow through in providing this plaque. So with that, Mr. Chair, we are wanting to amend the first reading of our overview of what the plaque should say, and amend it to the amendment that was just passed out.
Okay. I think we're going to have to use a little different form than what's in print. And Mr. Cleary.
Mr. Chairman, I believe the amendment would read, on page 1, line 8, after Mexican-Americans, insert, and members of all other nationalities, comma, ethnic groups, and subgroups.
Okay. Should everybody get that, or do you want Mr. Cleary to repeat that?
Could you repeat that again, Mr. Cleary?
Okay.
That's Mr. Chairman and Representative Dominguez and members, after on the amendment would read page 1, line 8, after Mexican American veterans,
uh-huh,
insert, and members of all other nationalities, ethnic groups, and subgroups.
Okay.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, go ahead, Mr. Cleary.
Perhaps instead of "and members of," it should say "and veterans of all other nationalities, ethnic groups, and subgroups."
Oh. Okay, Mr. Cleary, why don't you read the whole thing again? So you,
the whole sentence?
Yes, if you could.
Okay. Yes. With the amendment, the first sentence beginning on line 1.7 would read, a memorial plaque may be placed in the Court of Honor on the Capitol grounds to recognize the valiant service of all Mexican-American veterans, and with the new language, and veterans of all other nationalities, ethnic groups, and subgroups who have honorably and bravely served in the United States Armed Forces during both peacetime and war since the founding of this great nation.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Cleary. Representative Stevenson, do you have something to the motion? Or?
Yes, Mr.
Chairman. Okay, Representative Stevenson.
And Representative Vengas.
Yes, sir.
I think on this... I understand what you're doing. I'm just wondering, in terms of the multinational here, if you're naming one group and you're not naming the others, you're just being all inclusive. And I'll use the example of the Hmong, who were very instrumental in the Vietnam War. Where I guess I'm just wondering, can you do the service of all Mexican Americans and not do all of the other nationalities as well? I think that's the kind of the crux of the issue that we're talking about here. Not that I don't support this, but I don't know if you can write it very small and get them all in there or what. But I think just merely saying "and all other nationalities and ethnic groups and subgroups," although it may seem on its face to be all inclusive, it's not. And so I'm just wondering if you have addressed that issue.
Mr. Chair, Stevenson, Paul Vance just to answer that question, so I'll give it to Paul.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Mendel.
I can understand your point, and as I pointed out with the one that has 38 organizations, when it started with the Merchant Marines, we added the WACs and the WAVES and about three or four groups from Northwest Airlines. Were we to start down a list, I mean, you get into listing Native Americans and African Americans, and then the minute you get to African Americans, there are black people who are not from Africa who resist the form African American. So my fear is that the list would be so long you would need to like have 20 different plaques, and then the purpose is self-defeating. My hope is that this would, by singling out the Mexican Americans, because they started the effort, they funded the plaque, that one group can get recognized and legitimately. But if you start down a list, I fear, you know, as elected officials, I'm sure whenever you started down a list of thank you, you know you've automatically missed someone. So I fear that we would for sure not be able to do a comprehensive list in the space provided.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, I appreciate that clarification. I understand where we're coming from, and I wholly agree. I mean, the Mexican-American veterans have funded this. They started the initiative. And I think sometimes when we put in things like this that tend to be a little touchy, and they get revisited because people feel like they haven't had their voice heard, sometimes we put in legislative intent. And that legislative intent basically says, because of the actions of these individuals who have gone forth and, you know, and put some conditions on there to say that you as a members of the veteran community have put together the effort to recognize the minority's contributions to our warfighting effort, and thereby have, you know, put forth the effort to bring this plaque forward. The reason I say that is, I think then it puts some qualification on it. You weren't just picked out of nowhere, that you were actually the ones that drove the program to bring this legislation forward. And that would lend the legitimacy to someone else coming in and saying, how come we weren't there? Well, these are the people that really started the movement. So I would encourage, maybe we could do some legislative language, legislative intent language that says what has transpired here. And I'd be happy to work with Representative Dominguez, or I'm sure Assistant Commissioner Puglisi could do that as well. But that would be my recommendation as we go forward in this, and that possibly in the next committee that's put on as an amendment as well.
All right. Thank you, Representative Peterson. Anything you care? We actually have a list going here, and Representative Wardlow, was it your intent to speak to the motion?
Well, I'll wait till after.
Okay. How about Representative Hawes? Was it to the motion?
It was to the amendment, and I was in agreement with Representative Severson here that I think you need to have legislative intent, because the topic is going to come up, and you might as well answer it right in the legislation. It would also be interesting to give me a partial list of the ethnic groups and subgroups, if you have one that's convenient in your file. I know it wouldn't be comprehensive, but it would be an interesting list to see, just to help me understand why that can't be done on the fly. Someday send it to me, please.
Mr. Mendel.
Mr. Chair, I'd probably have to refer to the U.S. Census Bureau, and if any of you had a chance to attend the Science Museum exhibit on racism, they had a display just to this effect that depending on the decade that they're asking questions, people's nationalities, ethnic groups, and subgroups change. And one year you may be Hispanic, and another year you may be Puerto Rican, and another year you may be completely something else.
Sure.
So I, you know, recognizing that the United States government recognizes the census group, I wouldn't begin to try to figure out what is an all-inclusive list.
I would hope. I will withdraw the question. I have another or a comment. I'll have another just if we did it on March 17th, we could all be Irish.
Representative Doherty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This comment is probably addressed to everyone up there and everyone behind me and up here. Can the language of this do something to the extent of presented by the Mexican-American veterans in the name of all groups? Because these guys started it. We'd like to recognize that. That would give them credit for coming up with the idea, for doing the work, and still be more inclusive.
I really like that.
That's my suggestion, and I'd like to hear from all those that this is very important to.
Representative Dominguez.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Doty. I appreciate that comment, and I think I'll let that comment probably Mike could answer that better than I can, seeing that they are the Mexican-American vets.
We realize that the recognition is important to all the minority groups, so we're not... we're not going to be exclusive of that. We want to welcome everybody, and that's including any other group. You know, when you go to a war effort, it's everybody in this country, and it should be that way.
Okay, Mr. Polizzi?
Mr. Chair and members, Representative, I think that's a wonderful idea. When I look back at Paul Mandel and we gave each other a nod, I think that accomplishes what we're trying to accomplish and does it in a really good way.
Okay, Representative Dominguez?
I agree. I only can say I could agree, Chair and members. That could be worked out with the intent of the legislation itself.
Okay. Do you want...
Mr. Chair, do we need a hurrah from the audience?
can we get an amen over here?
I guess my question to you is, do you want to change your motion or what the...
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hawes.
Where does this go from here?
It will go to Representative Otremba's committee.
I would suggest, I think we've got a great idea here, but I don't think we should be trying to wordsmith it right at this present time. I suggest that we take our time on that. We know what we want out of here, and then move it forward with language that you think is in the intent and have that language sent back to us to examine it to see if it was in the spirit of what we were thinking today.
Yeah. Representative Dominguez.
I believe, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Hawes, I think you hit the nail on the head there when you mentioned that, and that's what we'd like to do, is move it today and come back with a language and that will be sufficient for everyone.
Your original motion, is that still in play, or are you going to... Is that what you had in mind, Representative?
Right.
Okay.
My original motion, but as the conversation went on, Mr. Chair, I think that we can come back with the regular intent once we work with the Office of CAP and the Office of the Veterans with the intent language. I think we will find that we'll come together on it.
Your motion to amend, are you still going forward with that, with the language we talked on earlier?
Yeah, we need to go forward with that, and then with process, as we go along here, we will come back with the intent of the language.
Any further discussion on the motion to amend? Oh, Representative Otremba.
Mr. Chair, you might, I don't know how fast we have to get our bills on track. You might want to do this and have it come to my committee with the amendment, with all of the pieces, because I'm afraid if we get too far behind, it's not going to happen this year. So, and I'm willing to do that. So.
Oh, great. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
And we will. We can put that together.
Okay. And good. We'll move forward with that in mind then. Back to your motion to amend. Any further discussion on that motion? Okay. All in favor of the oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion is approved. Representative Dominguez.
With that, Mr. Chair and members, I would like to move House File 3240.
Excuse me, Representative Dominguez. Okay. Representative Wardlow has been patiently waiting.
Oh, okay.
Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since I'm an author on the bill, I'd like to speak to it. First of all, Mr. Medina, you got that CD patch. I think there's a couple others up there, five or six.
We also have Manny Geary. I want to recognize him because he's at all our parades, and he's really important part of our group, and Manny was the guy that drove all the Marines and Phoebes onto those islands in the Pacific.
I've met him and talked to him. He's phenomenal.
I think he had to retire because he ran out of shirt here.
Besides, he's the only one who still fit in his uniform.
But I just want to publicly
recognize the Seabees. I know the Marines and sailors fight a lot.
Yes.
Although nobody in the Army better talk bad about a sailor, because then they got me too. if you want something built fast and well, you call the Seabee. Now, the noise and light discipline isn't for crap, on the other side, but they can sure build. And in fact, maybe I'll talk to you later about a story in Vietnam where the Seabees bailed my outfit out. You know, half of us went in and half of us got dumped. Thank you, Navy. And one thing about the Navy, they always guarantee you at least a one-way ride. Sometimes it's only halfway there, buddy. No. I'll tell you a story about how they helped us out, but I won't bore you now. But one of the main reasons I signed on was because I have so many Mexican friends, you know, comrades who I served with that were just outstanding Marines. And so right away, and two of them, I had in boot camp, my first boot camp, when I was enlisted, I had four DIs. The only two that didn't hit me were the Mexican DIs. You know, they were good at getting in your face, but they kept the rifle but away from my stomach. You know, I have the utmost respect for the Mexicans I served with, but we did have a couple Native Americans who were just outstanding as well, and so I'm thankful for this amendment, but. I have lots of stories about my Mexican friend. Anyway, I support the bill.
Thank you, Representative Wardlow. I should ask, is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify on the bill? Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mayor Rangel,
why don't you come down to the microphone so we can pick it up?
So many groups, I don't know what you have to wear. But they're all patriotic organizations. Thank you.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, and identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you. My name is Raymond J. Rangel. I was born in Minnesota 75 years ago. And all the organizations, just for information, because I think right now we're at a critical time, and you hear a lot about Hispanic or Spanish-speaking people, and I guess sometimes we forget that we didn't come over here on the boat; we were already here, along with the Native Americans. It's just as you can see by the names of most of the states. Nuevo Mexico, California, Florida, there happen to be Spanish and Texas, it just goes on and on. And those that aren't are Native American names. But anyway, when I joined the organization, as well as Manny and Gary, who we hadn't belonged to a lot of veterans groups because a lot of times we weren't welcome. And sometimes they said, well, can't you start your own group or things like that. But to cut the story short, it's amazing now that some of our members are officers in various groups. They're hunting us out. I don't, because we have that work ethic. Maybe we retain our health longer. Maybe we're more patriotic. It's hard to say. But we have the president of the Korean War Veterans that's Hispanic. And he belonged to the, he was an officer in the Ramsey County officer, Veterans Group Council. And then we have a VFW district commander, and he's also commander of Mexican American Post 5. And it just goes on like that. And I hold about four hats, including I'm on the screening committee. Senator Norm Coleman put me on for the last 4 years on the screening committee for all the the military academies in the United States. We screened for the Naval Academy, Air Force Academy, and West Point, and I've had the privilege to serve on that committee. So we're active We'd like to say that when we receive our honorable discharge, our duty and responsibility to our family, our community, and the United States did not end. It continues. And I'm happy to say that I just see it all around us. It's just that we haven't, you might say we haven't come off, but now we're almost in full bloom. And I thank the committee and the chair for this opportunity to speak. And we don't ask for recognition just for ourselves, but to remember all those that serve, especially, I think the most neglected are the females. Every time the opportunity comes up, I always want to mention that, because our organization, the American Veterans, AMVETS for short, accepts women as equal. We have one, Rosemary Campos, who is a teacher right now. She was a Marine, and she's one of our members. So when I introduce her, I always say she's a veteran, not an auxiliary. She doesn't make coffee for us, et cetera, et cetera. I said, or a fundraiser, she's a veteran. So we're proud of that. And then you're talking about the Marines. Historically, the Hispanics have a big history in the Marine Corps and the Airborne. It goes way back. And some of our members are, most of our members, I believe, are from the Marines, and the other big group is from the Airborne. And we have, he became, in World War II, he served on the islands and the Airborne, and then he was on the, served in Japan. Then he received his discharge and continued, and then he joined the Marines for a short time. And then from there, he went to the Air Force and retired as a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. And here's somebody that was drafted out as a junior at Humboldt High School on West Side of St. Paul. And, 50 years later, this is about recognition, 50 years later, through the mail, received his diploma from high school. You would think that maybe they would have had an assembly, because here's a gentleman that served, was called up for three different conflicts, World War II, the Korean, and Vietnam, active duty, and nothing. So it's up to us, the veterans, to recognize these people. Last night I was the chaplain. I'm the chaplain for the Ramsey County Council, the veterans, and there was a good gathering, but our numbers are dwindling. The other one that I want to mention was we have a member that's on active duty in Virginia. He's a major, and he received the Congressional Medal of Honor from former President Clinton 20 years later. How that happened, he was in the Airborne, he saved several lives by putting his body in harm's way. He was a medic. And the injured were receiving fire, so he laid over him and dragged him to safety afterward. And that was not once, but about three times. So they had a reunion, and the Airborne fellows got together and said, "How does it feel to have your, to receive the medal?" He said, "What medal?" He said, "We did all the paperwork. Didn't you get the Congressional Medal of Honor?" He said, "I don't know anything about it." So that just shows you that we have to take care of our own. So they followed the track and tracked that resolution that they had gotten together, and they reactivated, and finally, 20 years later, President Clinton awarded them the Congressional Medal of Honor. And his name is Alfred Rascon, and he's a major. And what I like about his story, his parents were immigrants, and he asked his father when he got out of high school if he could join the service. He finally gave his consent, and he says, "I always remember, we always had the biggest front door in the neighborhood until I realized I lived in a garage." So that's just one of the stories that he was, his father was an immigrant, finally gave him permission, and he served faithfully and got the highest award from the United States of America.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Rangel. Anything further, committee members? Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chairman, and I'd like just to make a comment.
Mexican Americans are still serving proud in our military. Both my sons are West Point graduates, and while my son, one son was over in Baghdad, he sent back a letter from their company. He had a couple of Mexican Americans that earned their citizenship by serving, and they were just such a proud family that they earned their citizens by serving in our military. So I just wanted to add that. Thank you.
Okay.
I want to mention that my father, when he joined, when he was drafted, they found out that he wasn't documented. When he got through basic training, the U.S. Army sent him to Canada, and they told him to use his GID card to get back in the States. And he was documented, and after the war, he was awarded his citizenship, and he's very proud of that.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Mr. Chair, seeing that we're giving all stories, I need to give mine, too. being a proud family member of 19, and I'm the 18th child, 15 of my brothers have gone to the service and have served proud in the Army and in the Marine Corps. We didn't have anybody in Navy. I'm sorry, Stevenson, we had very proud of my family. We have nephews now in the service and continuously wanting to be in service. I had a son that was in the Marine Corps, served in Iraq twice, and he just got out of the service. Very proud of him. So he came out as a staff sergeant, made his way up to rank, and that's why it means a lot to me to carry this plaque. It honors me to do this because, I think everyone should be proud of our United States of America, and however we can do this, we should come forward. Mr. Chair, I just want to say that, and thank you for the time.
Sure. Thank you, Representative Dominguez. Anything further? Okay, Representative Dominguez renews his motion that House File 3240, as amended and with recommendation, passed to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair and members.
And I would also, Representative Severson, as you're preparing, I would like to say to the veterans here, and today in particular, the Mexican-American veterans, thank you for your service, and we're glad you're here. All right, Representative Severson, welcome to your committee, and if you'd like to move your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would move House File 3344 be approved and passed on to the committee, I think, on Agriculture and Veteran Affairs.
Correct.
And, Mr. Chair, members, I do have an amendment here, but I want to have some discussion before we pick up this amendment. And this is going to be kind of a comprehensive debate here, is my hope that we can kind of get the gist of this bill out. And I'm going to start by saying this is a veteran's preference provision. And veteran's preference basically means that when a veteran steps up to a job, that his prior service is considered as a positive factor in the hiring process. Now, in 1975, veterans' preference was changed. All of the stories that you just heard about our veterans coming back from World War II and coming back from World War from World War II, and then the Korean War, and then the beginnings of the Vietnam War, were subject to a provision of law that was called Veterans Preference, that they were able to take the SCORE test for public service, whether it was a state or local government, and they were able to use that test score and the interviews as consideration for preference and being hired for that particular position. In fact, when they were going up for that position, if they were at the top part or the top ranking in the group that was being considered, they got the nod. And I'll tell you, quite honestly, the issue was that America understood that these men and women had stepped up to the plate. They had volunteered their time. They had gone into harm's way because of what they believed was their responsibility to fight for the freedoms that we enjoy. 1975, something huge happened. And we'll just step back in time for just a moment. And if you take a look back at the conflict, or the internal conflict in the United States of the peace movement, of the anti-war movement, of all the things that were creating an atmosphere so that when our veterans came back, many of them who came back with uniforms on got spit on. Many of them were disregarded as baby killers and as war criminals. And those men and women came back after serving honorably, after being in the throes of life and death often, watching their buddies get blown up, were treated with disdain. And Mr. Chair and members, I believe that's what is at the root of this change that took place in the veterans hiring policy in Minnesota. After that, there was, I'll quite honestly say that the veterans' preference in Minnesota was gutted. In fact, when we talk about some of the homeless, and Representative Hawes is very familiar with these statistics because he's been an advocate for the homeless, and he knows that about 25% of our homeless are Vietnam veterans. And I will bring to you right now the fact that that is probably due to in part to the raping of this provision. And what responsibilities do we have as a state to step up to the plate for those who have served and say, you know what, we understand that you went through some hard times, we understand that you're coming back, and that you may have some problems holding your job. We talked about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and that doesn't always happen right away. It starts to happen possibly after they've been back and they're coping with issues for a while. And so we have been very active as a state in pressing our private corporations and our private employers into rehiring these guard members who go off for a year and or for a year and a half after training and are detached from their job and then come back. And then we have the Soldiers and Sailors Relief Act that basically says if you've had a job for them, you need to hold a job for them. They come back and they may be slightly dysfunctional when they get back. But we say it's your responsibility, you need to do that. However, the state is not willing to do that. The state is not stepping up to the plate and saying, you know what, if there's a veteran who's applying for a job and that veteran goes through the process, they may come to the top of the list. But guess what? The state just throws that list over the side and says, you know what, we're taking a candidate from a different area. And there's nothing wrong. There's no statute after this was gutted in 1975 that says that there is a requirement to hire a veteran if he comes towards the top of the list. Now, the bill that you have before you says that if they are at the top of the list, they have to hire a veteran. If that veteran is in with another group, that they have to hire a veteran. And the amendment that I do have right now, and I'm going to ask somebody from Doerr. I don't know if anybody is from Doerr is here. I know there's someone from Deed. I had Doerr in my office yesterday, and there were some concerns about this provision, that this was going to be far too stringent, and that state employers would be forced to hire veterans. And I said, that's the idea. The idea is that we have veterans who have paid a price and they should be given due consideration. In fact, they should be given preferential consideration because not just of the sacrifice they made, but of the potential of the things that are coming down the pike that we as a state need to step up to the plate and say we're willing to keep you in that job until you get straightened out. And so this bill is not as strong as it could be. I have an amendment that basically says if there is a veteran who is in the competition and they get to, towards the end of the competition, whether they're at the top or not, they are chosen as to fill that position. And I just want to add here that I don't know, and I think I can speak for most of the veterans that I know in our veteran organizations, that we're not looking for preferential treatment. We're not looking for benefits. We're looking for the right thing. And so I guess at this point, Mr. Chair and members, I'd open it up for, I hope we could have some debate on this issue and speak to the responsibilities of the state of Minnesota as a leader in employment in state and local government of what we should fulfill as a state to those who have served so honorably and bravely. Mr. Chair, I'd open it up.
Okay, thank you, Representative Severson. Committee members? Representative Alex.
Thank you. Representative Severson, did you have any discussions on the testing procedures when they're putting this together? Like in a civil service test, you're going to end up with an oral or written or whatever, and you're going to actually end up with a numerical score next to the people, and then you're going to have the top person on that civil exam. And prior to that, many places they would hire from the top three or hire from the top 10. In the business, I was always wondering why, if you gave the test, you didn't hire the top person anyway. I mean, I always wondered that.
Right.
And almost every time I was involved in it, when the top person wasn't hired, about 3 years later, they wished they would have. You know? but I don't see how this works unless there's a good standardized testing. And then also in this system, I think you have to consider that in some of the areas there is already a preference to, if you're a veteran and you're a disabled veteran, you receive points towards that exam, both in the federal and the state. Have you given either one of those any thoughts, or you want to comment on this?
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Haas, those are good questions. You know, when 2 years ago we kind of bolstered veterans' preference, and I thought that was going to be the fix. But what I came to find out is that a lot of state and local governments no longer use that point system. They've basically just kind of done an end around. They do the interviews and they say, okay, there's the point system, here's the list. We're not using it. Here's a pool of applicants. We're going to choose from this pool of applicants. So there's no teeth in the law. There's no compelling to go by a particular process. And so that's kind of what this is aimed at. And perhaps Mr. Cleary could clarify this a little bit. I think he's got a little bit of history on this as well.
Mr. Cleary.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members, I think the key thing to note about the Severson bill is that the veteran still must be qualified to do the job. Basically, the bill at the state and local level says if the veteran is qualified to do the job, the veteran would go to the head of the list and be hired in front of non-veterans, just as was done up from the Civil War up through 1974. The veteran would go to the head of the list. So the veteran still needs to be able to do the job. Where there is a point system, to speak directly to Representative Haas' question, where there is a point system, the veteran would still be assigned the 5 points, or a disabled veteran, the 10 points, or the widow of a veteran who was so disabled that he himself couldn't do it would be assigned the 10 points. And then that person would go to the head of the list, and the hiring would be done of the veteran. The veteran or the widow would be hired ahead of any non-veteran. So the points currently, I would agree, don't matter much simply because they can hire from anywhere on the list. If the veteran happens to get 5 points or 10 points and push up the list, it really doesn't matter because the veteran, because they can hire from anywhere on the list. This would ensure that the veteran would be hired. off that list. But the veteran, but the key thing is the veteran still has to be able to do the job in order to be on that list.
Okay. Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious as to why the law made sense before 1975 and then it didn't. And if it was right before 75, I think it's right now. So I'd like to see this bill go forward.
Representative Vega.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe this is a question for either Representative Stevenson or Mr. Cleary, but kind of to clarify what Representative Haas was saying. So if there is a testing portion of the application and the top person is not a veteran but scores higher than the number two person who is a veteran, how would that work? I guess just to be very poignant.
Mr. Cleary.
Yes, members, if the veteran with the augmented score, augmented by the 5 points or the 10 points, were disabled, if the person with the augmented score makes the list at all, that person would go to the head of the list and would need to be hired ahead of the non-veteran. That's the way it was done. Let me put it in these words. Up through 1974, if the veteran was qualified to do the job, the veteran got the job. If there were two or more veterans, one of them got the job. And this bill would restore that principle. So if the veteran would end up second on the list, simply on the basis of score, the veteran would actually be placed first on the list.
So, one follow-up, Mr. Chair. So what you're saying is this is a veteran's affirmative action bill.
Representative
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Bigham. You could say that.
Okay.
Basically, what we're saying is we want to restore it to what they used to do before the conflict, before the Vietnam conflict. And again, going back to the issue of they have given their pound of flesh, and so the consideration would be that when I met with the Department of Employee Relations yesterday on this, and they had some concerns about it because they felt like it was going to be doing exactly what we were talking about it doing today. Was that you've got women, minorities, and disabled are all targeted in our statute as groups that have preferential treatment. And as we're going through this process, we need to say, well, what about the veterans? What about why would we not give preferential treatment to those who have stepped up to the plate and served in our armed forces and preserved our freedoms? And when I don't know if you remember the bill that we had here last year was veterans owned businesses as a targeted group. But when it went into the Government Affairs Committee, the question came up, well, is this legal? And the Department of Administration came forward and said, actually, it's at the state's discretion. It is for women, minorities, and disabled have to meet certain criteria in order to be eligible for that process. In other words, they have to prove that they are discriminated against at a particular level and that they are not the numbers that are being represented in the workforce. In this particular case, that's not true. The state can step up and basically say, you know what, we believe that this is a targeted group because of a special situation.
Follow up, Representative Regan? Okay, thank you.
Do you have a list?
Yeah. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Peterson, if you could, what will this do for our workforce? You know, we're always talking about keeping our veterans here in Minnesota. Could you just address that?
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Detmer. You know, when I met with Dewar yesterday and we went over some of the numbers, those that had applied all the way through, you know, just the general population, those that applied, and then those that had been hired and went through every particular category. And at the end, the end result was for those who had the 10-point advantage on the veterans preference provision, 1.9% of those applicants for those jobs had the 10-point advantage. 1% got the job. So basically what you're saying is half of them got the job who had that 10-point advantage. And so it is such a small number to start with that I don't think it's going to make a dent of difference in, you know, opting people out of jobs. But the other issue is the other ones that weren't hired, why weren't they hired? And I did request from the Department of Administration that I said, well, maybe the way to compromise on this bill is if you do not hire the veterans, then we just have them fill out a 30-page report of why you didn't hire the veterans. And they said, well, we already fill out a report. And then I said, well, okay, well, then what I'd like to see is a copy of those reports from all of those people, if they're not confidential, across our state employment agencies, and then call up those individuals and see if they feel like they were treated fairly in that employment cycle. And maybe that's something we can go after, but I guess what I'd like to see is I'd like to see 1.9% instead of 1%.
Yeah, Chairman, just follow up. Yeah, I support this bill. You know, I anything we can do to keep our veterans here in Minnesota, put them to work, I support this bill.
Okay, thank you, Representative Detmer. Representative Hawes.
Yeah, now I've got confused, but I'm so normal in that position, it doesn't scare me. What we're asking for is after this testing procedure, and you have a list, if the veteran is the number one on the list, the veteran is going to be hired for that position. Is that not what we're asking for?
Representative
Chair and Representative Hall, that is what this bill currently says. Now, if we put this, the veteran's preference must be hired. In other words, if they meet the minimum requirements for the position in a pool of applicants, that veteran must be hired. And so this is kind of my quandary, Mr. Chair and members. I want to be, first of all, I want this to go through. And I believe that they are worthy, and maybe this amendment is the thing that gets us from 1% to 1.9%. In fact, I would probably say that is the case. And so, Chair and members, I would move House File 3344, 1JC amendment.
Okay. The amendment's being passed out now, members. Okay. Discussion to the amendment. Representative Wardlow is on the list. Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is probably pertains to the amendment as well. I was just thinking of those Hmongs, the Laotians who helped so many of our flyers get back safely from north of the border in Vietnam. They're probably not recognized as veterans because they were veterans over there, not part of our armed forces. Where do they fit into this, or do they not? It's just a thought I was wondering. Because there's veterans from other countries who have helped us out, I guess. What are your thoughts on that?
Representative Stevenson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Wardlow, I'll just take a quick shot and then I'll defer to Mr. Cleary. But you know, the veterans would be under the statute definition of veteran having served more than 180 days on active duty. So that would be the definition of this veteran and eligibility for veteran's preference. But I'll defer to Mr. Cleary.
Mr. Cleary.
Yes, members and representatives, the veteran must serve in the United States Armed Forces in order.
Mr. Cleary, but you know, the veterans would be under the statute definition of veteran having served more than 180 days on active duty. So that would be the definition of this veteran and eligibility for veteran's preference. But I'll defer to Mr. Cleary.
Mr. Cleary.
Yes, members and representatives, a person must serve in the United States Armed Forces in order to become a veteran.
All right, thank you. Representative Wardlow.
I understood that. I was just curious. You know, I kind of got left out in the cold. They always are, I guess. Just a thought to think about.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hawes.
Representative Severson. I think there in the selection and the hiring of personnel,
in all our positions, we still want to have the most qualified person for the position. And when we have a qualification list, and we have the top of the list, as I said before, I always wonder why we're not choosing the top of the list. If we have a veteran at that top of the list, as your bill was written, he or she then, that veteran, would be given that position. The employer, the state or the school, is also pretty well protected by probationary periods, and they could protect themselves if their testing procedures were not. When we go to a large list, though, and we have qualified positions, I've tested out in some civil service exams where there was 50 people that passed. And I don't know if the first 49 that took that test were non-veterans and the 50th was the veteran. We would want to put our employers into the fact that because they had a 70, they're going to be put in front of those people that had 100, 99, 98, 97, all the way down the list. I think we want to protect our veterans, but I think we also want to protect the quality of the people that we're putting in those positions. And I think this is the wrong thing to do. I think we want to protect our veterans and benefits with giving them points for their service, the 5 points and the 10 points for being disabled. And if they're on the top of the list, they ought to be given the job. And I think when we start taking from lower standards for those veterans, it is not good for the employer and may not be good for the veteran that you're putting into that position if they are just barely qualified or just qualified rather than the most qualified or highly qualified.
Representative Hodge. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Severson. I really like the bill that you brought forward, but with this amendment, I have the same concerns that Representative Haas is expressing. As a person who's hired people because of veterans' preference, which has worked out well, I also know that oftentimes there are many, many applicants, and I've seen jobs that I've had to screen over 100 applicants which are eligible throughout the process. And if we're just going to say minimum qualifications, and if you're augmented by veterans' preference, you're automatically hired. That's a little concerning for me. I have no problem, putting the 5 and 10 points on and honoring the service of an individual who's sacrificed for our country, and hopefully that puts them to the top of the list. But I think we need to keep our sights on the top of the list and not move our eyes downward. So I'm concerned about this. I hope we can move the bill forward under its original form. But with the amendment, at this point, I have concerns.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Severson.
And I understand those arguments. I think it's the same concerns that Dewar had. But I will say, we got to go back to the initial intent of veterans' preference. And back to the issue of these individuals have served in sometimes some very traumatic arenas. And so is our intent here just to reward them for their service, or is our intent to cover them at a time when they're most vulnerable, to keep that 25% of the veterans off the streets by giving them a state job or a local government job and saying, we understand your service, we understand the hardship that you've been through, and because the state is so magnanimous, and which has proved itself yesterday on the bridge disaster, is willing to scoop you up and hold you up for a little while until you get back on your feet. So I guess with that in view, I'll withdraw my amendment and we'll bring it forward as it is currently written. But I think we'll have this discussion hopefully on the House floor as well. And I think this serves a couple of purposes. One is that there was a huge disservice done to our veterans when the 75 preference was gutted. And that as a repercussion for that, we have many lives that have been at risk since that time frame. We need to right that wrong. But also that that we have qualified workers out there, and that and we need to recognize that we have an obligation to those people who are looking for employment after they get out of the service, and they are, in 99% of the cases, tremendous assets to the state. And that 1% where they're going through some trauma, then we need to be able to be there to help them. So, Mr. Chair, I would withdraw my amendment.
Representative Detmer. Wardlow, excuse me. There you go. Representative Wardlow.
Weight class.
Yeah.
He still beat me. Is there, thank you, Mr. Chair, is there, I thought Mr. Representative Hawes made a good point about, because I don't want the quality workforce to deteriorate just because someone just barely qualified. Is there any thought to, in the next committee, having the veteran be having to be in the top half or top quarter of the pool, something like that, to give comfort to those who really don't, who really do agree with President Haas and Hosh more than they do us.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. We can think about that on the way to the next committee.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, anything further, committee? Anybody in the audience who wishes to testify to the bill? Welcome to the committee, Mr. Kaiser, and identify yourself for the tape.
Yes, my name is Gary Kaiser. I live in Roseville, Minnesota. I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council. This really brings to a point, I was one of those individuals. I served two tours in Vietnam. I came back, went back to college, got my degrees, and came down to the Twin Cities. I was from North Dakota because there wasn't any jobs there. And it was 1975 that jobs were hard to come by then. And Hennepin County had their applications for different planning and there were two jobs that I applied for. And you had to take a civil service test. And I did pretty well on those. But the interview, I asked them about veterans' preference, and they were a little bit taken aback by that, that that meant anything to them. And of course, I asked that I be considered for that, and after I waited around for a bit, and they actually, I called in and asked if there was any after-action report, and they said, yes, there was, and I said, well, what was it? And the gal read me the report that the interviewing people had had. I said I'd passed, I'd been at 90% in the test. However, they said that they was more concerned about the veteran's preference than I was about my qualifications, and that they had considered other people. And I'll tell you, I really torqued my jaw. You know, that they didn't really care whether I was done out. There was, I asked whether there was any other veterans that had met the top 10%. I said, no, you were the only one. Now, it was a divine intervention there that I didn't get that job because I got into other businesses and it worked out better for me. However, it was not my choice. I thought that I was shortchanged in that. And of course, I was, 27 years old, and there's nothing I could do, so you just press on. And I think Representative Severson's bill here might help that. Obviously, what we need is to have that interview, because you can be a 100% brilliant person and a rotten administrator. So there's all sorts of other parameters involved with that. But this is another step, I think, to get back to this side. Because I really want these next, newest, greatest generation, these young men and women who are raising their hand right now, to have a better opportunity than I did as a Vietnam-era veteran. and just give a better shot at these young men and women who I think are smarter, highly educated, and just better than we were back in those days in the early 70s.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kaiser. Anything further? Representative Singleton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Stevenson, Mr. Kaiser. So it kind of begs the question with your story, then I'm wondering about education with employers or what kind of outreach there would be for new legislation on this. And Representative Severson, I don't know, is your bill going to be going to one of the committees here at the Capitol that deals with those types of things with employer, you know, new laws that relate to employees? Workforce, yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Representative Singleton, yeah, I think after it goes through Agriculture and Veteran Affairs, it probably should go to workforce development, higher workforce development.
Thanks.
All right. Anything further, Representative Singleton?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anything further, committee members? Okay. Representative Stevenson renews his motion that House File 3344 be passed with recommendation to the Committee on Agricultural, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and a good discussion, and I appreciate the kind of the back and forth. I think it will help make this bill a better bill.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Stevenson. We appreciate your work on this. Anything further, committee members, before we adjourn? Okay, meeting adjourned.